ahead and get started.
What do you mean at the airport at 10?
We're going to change the order of our agenda just a bit. Mr. Campion has a pressing appointment he needs to get to. But before we get started, one thing I would like to do, we have our new city clerk with us today, and I just want to take a quick moment for her to stand up so that everyone can see who Anissa is. Anissa, is there anything you'd like to say in terms of where you're coming from?
I'm Anissa Hollingshed. I've been here for 2 days now. Coming from the city of Minneapolis. I've worked in the city clerk's office there for 9.5 years, so very excited to be here. Got all settled into Rochester 2 weekends ago when it was 60 degrees out. just very happy to be here. Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you.
You're still here after 2 days.
Yeah.
They haven't chased you out yet.
No.
Yeah. Well, wait till she gets to a council.
Yeah.
9 hours.
Yeah, you missed the 4 a.m.
9 hours, 17 minutes. Yeah. Get her right.
All right. Next up, Linda Hillenbrand has something she'd like to talk about.
Ooh, I just want to take 3 minutes of your time to share with you the beautiful plaque that we received at the Laserfish National Convention a few weeks ago in Long Beach. California. Laserfish is a document imaging company that has 32,000 clients in 45 states and in 32 countries. And our human resource team, with the help of the IT team, won this award in the area of HR for converting our personnel files and taking a tuition reimbursement manual process and converting that entirely to an electronic process. So it was great recognition for the city of Rochester. We attended along with 3,000 other participants, got to go up on a big stage and put our city logo up there, and it was really a proud moment for our organization. So this is the beautiful plaque we got. It exemplifies all the hard work done by IT and HR, so I thought you would want to see the beautiful plaque we received. So that's all. Just sharing a bit of good news.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Like hanging up somewhere prominent.
All right, next up, let's go to item two on our agenda, which is the Chateau Circle Special District Amendment. Mr. Campion, you want to kick it off?
Perfect. So at the last council meeting, I kind of laid out that I had a number of amendments that I wanted to have reviewed. Had the impact this Friday of a snowstorm that we weren't expecting, so it took me just a little bit longer to get everything pulled together. You should all have received an email early this morning. Well, noon this morning. It felt like this morning when I was preparing it. Can the applicants here as well, you guys received a copy, I hope. Perfect. So what I was hoping to do today, and Greg, who's been working with me, has been fantastic to help go back and forth, even answering an email over the weekend, which sometimes we don't expect people to, so that worked out perfect. But went through this and put all of the changes, the amendments that I was going to propose into here, labeled them kind of by what type they are on the top. Actually, let's just pass these out. Why am I holding on?
Perfect.
Thank you.
You probably...
I'm trying to hold the information. Is this different than the... There is nothing different than... I did not say that Greg Johnson was a planning department.
And I forwarded it.
You forwarded it? Brent forwarded it?
Oh, I don't want a cluster of paper.
Yeah. Do you guys want physical copies? Do you want? There you go. Well, city admins, I'm going to hold on to one here. So what I did is I took them and I put a cover letter on it that kind of gives an English description of the changes that went into each page. You can see why it came up. There's only one color in this document, so everything has been colored. Just single color is my changes. This is based off the staff's final version, which was incorporating the applicant's requests and staff's one-page memo that they laid on our council packet that night. So took that, then went...
That, if I could interject, that's the version that was on page 315.
Yep.
And had the red and blue comments.
Plus, plus. So I think it's 315 plus, right? There was a few late-breaking changes
that
you guys had recommended.
That's right. That went in there. You accepted all those changes and then went from there.
So I figured the best way to move this thing forward was to go from the last copy that we had some agreement on and throw the changes on top. Now, if there are people that want to revisit things that were... added before then, we would have to do that. But rather, I don't really know what the council would like to do today, so I put the cover letter on there so you wouldn't need me to talk to every single change and you could review it kind of at your leisure. my hope was to meet with the applicant this week to talk about anything that they would have comebacks on and to make sure we have a final version of what I'm recommending for the amendment by the time the packet goes out. So work with planning staff to get one copy from me included in the packet. Now, I think they probably also need some guidance from the remainder of council because I'm bringing my version with my hope to be supported changes. I want that in the packet because I want there to be one document to refer to for that. If you want another copy that does not have that in there, then I think that we need to instruct them to do so now. And then I guess I'm happy to talk if there's any specific change you're interested in here. I have a little bit of notes that I took alongside this so we can talk about any specific ones. Otherwise, maybe the best way to do this is to let you guys chew on it a little bit and send me if there are individual questions.
And I think, well, speaking for myself, this is what I was looking for. So thank you for doing that. I think we were just trying to get to one version that we could then all add our thoughts to. And then we wanted to get this in the hands of the developer, the neighborhood, and staff or council members. So I'm not going to particularly talk about anything today. This is the version that we would hope then that everyone at the March 6th hearing would direct their comments toward. If they like, dislike something, that's when we'll hash that out. If we can get that ahead of time, great. The thing I wouldn't want to see is a copy of this with more changes made to it. That just
a different font.
Yep. I don't want to see that, at least myself. So, Mr. Hickey?
Yeah, so I really appreciate all the good work here, Nick. I would say, you know, based on the timeline, because if we're looking to have this in the packet, you know, we're looking at Wednesday, or here it is Monday. So, I mean, one thought would be, I mean, this is the one that goes in the packet. I mean, no one's had really a chance to really digest this, you know, a quick read. The applicant certainly hasn't, the other neighbors. But if we want something for Monday, and it's got to be done Wednesday, it seems like one way ahead we have this be the version that we consider on Monday. And then based on the input we get between now and then the public hearing that night, we may have to strike things or perhaps add things, even though ideally we wish it was the final. Right. But I just don't think there's enough time.
I agree. This was the one that would go in the packet, and then other changes could be reflected.
And whether you support them or don't support them, I think the only set of highlighted changes here is stuff I put in. I think staff can bring the other copy for reference. If there's a clean version that we started from, you can bring that so you can reference that. That's a problem.
Okay. Thank you.
I'll volunteer. I just want to make sure you guys have, because obviously I have my contact info, but we'll make some time available tomorrow so you guys have a full cycle, the 24 hours at least, to take a look at it, which I realize is short, but we're all working on kind of a short timetable, believe it or not.
Okay.
Mr.
Wojcik.
Can I catch you guys after? And,
sure.
And we'll get that. Yep, we'll get some time on.
Mr. Wojcik.
My question, this would be for staff. There was some discussion as whether or not there would actually be a multi-use trail along Circle Drive in our public hearing. And my understanding is, I looked at the special district, one of the versions. I don't know which one. It was confusing. But I want to make, is there language in there that ensures that we'll have that that multi-use path along Circle Drive?
I don't know if the special district itself has language, but it does show that trail on the plan. I think the intent all along was to move the location of that trail, not to remove that trail. I think that was one of the reasons for the application itself, was to put that within the property line itself, within the easement, and not to have the whole thing in the right of way. I think that was the concern of County Public Works, was the location of it and not whether or not there would be one or not.
It's your grease.
Yeah, I actually thought I was addressed in the plan.
And I wasn't sure based on the discussion, so thank you.
So does it appear in one of the exhibits?
Yes.
That's the key.
Mr. Bilderbeck?
Nick, just want to thank you for your effort on this. I think this will make it a lot easier to go through. I agree.
Staff did with the water carrying, so they've been really great to work with.
All right. Anything else? Before we leave that topic, I just wanted to note that everyone should have received the memorandum from the city attorney that addressed that adjoining property topic. I read through the memo. It's pretty self-explanatory. It's rooted in the vested rights doctrine. It made sense to me. But certainly if anyone has questions, they can certainly ask the city attorney for further comment.
I haven't had an opportunity to read it.
When it went out, it went out today. It
looks like it'll be fantastic bedtime reading.
It'd be enthralling, yes.
Yeah. Essentially, it will say that the owner of the other parcel, the remaining parcel, does not necessarily have vested rights in the special district language by virtue of several things. They've not developed the project, they've not done some things. So, but I'll let you read the city attorney's well-done analysis.
You wanted a legal opinion.
He's nothing if not exhausting.
All right. So, if nothing else on that topic, we will move back to the top of our agenda and the Compass Points presentation.
Oh, I'm just going to excuse myself. So, normally I work very hard to be able to attend all these, but today I have some pressing business I have to take care of, so I apologize. But thank you for hearing me and getting that off the agenda.
All right, thank you. Press on. Audrey Betcher.
Okay. So, in your packet today is the 2016 Compass Points Report. And first I want to thank you because you actually helped fund this, the Compass Points document, and I want to thank you for that. It really is a public-private partnership designed to provide a real holistic view of our community, which I think is really important. It's modeled after the Minnesota Compass Points, and our city and county were really the first in the state to do a subgroup like this. And I think it tells us how we're doing as a community and gives us some objective data to really define as we try and work for a great quality of life for everyone. So back in 2013, the community networking group was formed. It's an informal group that anybody who wants to participate can participate. If you want to get on the mailing list, you just have to ask. And this group meets monthly to keep people informed on what's happening within the community. And really to make sure that the mission of the community networking group is to have a healthy and inclusive community where opportunity and responsibility are broadly shared. And as the work evolved, we realized that we really needed some benchmarks for the city and for Olmsted County. And that's when we turned to Wilder Research. And they're an expert on data and measuring healthy communities. They're out of the cities. They first created Compass Points in 2008. It really came out of the fact that there were foundations and other organizations trying to evaluate. And so they ended up creating this, in fact, they just came out, I think, a week or two ago with the 2017 Compass Points that's about the state as a whole. And we based the local one on that. So, and there's, in our, there's 13 key areas, as you saw, within that document that really looks at how we compare ourselves against other communities, up against the state, and nationally. So a local committee made up of the funders and community networking group members led the process. I was one of the co-chairs as part of that process. And I really think that as we go forward and we look at the strategic planning that the city is going to be doing, it's really important to have this objective data and a baseline on where we start, or where we are right now as a community, and kind of keep our eyes on how, on what's important. That certainly there are lots of things that are important that go into what is a healthy community. Economics is one of those, but there's so many other things that we have to do well to really be the community we want to be. And I think this document is actually a really good starting point for some of those conversations. So as we look, one of the things that we asked Wilder to do is to look at the data and tell us not what did we think, but what did they learn from looking at the data. And you'll see on that, on the first page, the notable trends document, really there's some really good things about Rochester, and we all know that. But there are some things we have to do better. As we look at some of the data that's also coming out of the planning department and looking at the labor gap that's coming down the pipe, we've got to have everyone be successful in order to fill the jobs that we know are coming as we do well. But we have that shortage of workers, transportation or issue, housing or issues. And as you get deeper into the data, this is kind of a baseline, but as you look at some of that data, there are gaps. We certainly have people doing well, but we certainly have people who do not do well in our economy and in our community. And so really this is a place to start. It's a tool we want everybody to use. We want to hopefully by sharing this data, we can actually bring some public-private partnerships together to continue to work on things within the plan to really make our community better. And the project was funded by the city, the county, Mayo Clinic, the Rochester Area Foundation, the Rochester Area Chamber of Commerce, and the United Way of Homestead County. So I just want you to be aware that this tool is out there and that I do hope that we use it as we go forward in the strategic planning. Any questions?
I'm sorry, Audrey, maybe you mentioned it. Will this benchmarking information be available like on the city website or something so that our community could see this?
Yeah, it is available right now. It's okay. On the community networking website. It's also on the Compass, the Wilder Research Compass Points website, and we can certainly put it anywhere you want it.
Put a link to it at least from the city website.
Yeah.
Mr. Hickey.
Yeah, thanks for the update. And I'll say I really like the format of the report. I think sometimes the term dashboard gets thrown around and it's not clear that it's really any kind of dashboard. Where this presented a lot of information, and there was data, but yet there was a little bit of a graphical form. It was easy to read. The comparisons were very good. So I really liked the format. I thought it was very good. Thank you.
Yeah, I agree.
I think one of the things that tends to be really confusing on this report, that we tried our best to do it, but as you look at the trend data, that's trend against ourselves. Right. So if you look at the better, worse, same, it's really, they have, even though this is our first report, they have data going back past years, and so that's how we're doing as a community, not necessarily how we're doing against the state or against national data.
Okay, Mr. Bilbeck?
Yeah, I think, Audrey, the nice thing about this is it kind of debunks some of the things that we thought or we've heard. This talks about factual versus the squeaky wheel or those that are making the most noise. I mean, I don't think most of us would have said the senior population is the fastest growing or has been the fastest growing in this area, even though we've all seen the senior facilities being built. I think that's a little surprising. So I think it's kind of nice the fact that it separates things out and shows it as a factual basis.
What numbers to it? Mr. Roger?
I appreciate the fact that one of the notable trends focuses on housing and the particularly the critical shortage of affordable housing. There are still a lot of people in this community that don't think affordable housing is a problem, and the fact that this is prominent on a dashboard, I'm very happy to see.
I have to say, personally, for me, that 46% of our renters, our cost burden, was...
It was lower than I honestly thought it would be.
It's still a huge number.
It's still, it's way up there. It's
yeah, I mean, it's probably about more than 10,000 people in the, in the city, I would think.
As part of the overall work of Compass Points or other than the supporting group, and I know we wrestle with a lot of solutions as we address housing or transportation and so forth, is there an opportunity to do case studies of some other communities that have maybe moved the needle, as it were, on some of these things and, you know, do some outreach and try to gain some outside insight as we continue, as I say, to wrestle with it internally?
I absolutely think there's opportunities, and that's in fact what that Cradle to Career coalition that's developing that I'm coming back next month to talk about is exactly what's happening around educational outcomes, because we know educational outcomes, and as you look at the educational sector here, we know educational outcomes have a huge impact on workforce, on public safety, on so many, on health. If we can improve educational outcomes, we can have a huge impact on moving the needle for many of these. And there is a group out there right now trying to build that coalition across public and private to try and do that. And part of that research has gone out there and looked at a number of communities that are moving the needle in that area. And so that's an example of how we're using this data to try and move that needle.
Okay. Mr. Bilderberg?
Audrey and Randy, you can jump in here too. Was the Southeast League looking at doing the Compass Points?
Southeast Minnesota League of Minnesota.
Journey to Growth is having that conversation about doing it. Mm-hmm. And they did present at that meeting, but it was coming out of Journey to Growth. But they are also talking about using Wilder.
Okay, because I think that would be... This, what's going to go on in this city is not going to just affect the city. It's going to affect the region. So seeing where they're at or what issues that we could work on together may be a good idea.
I think as part of it, the group Mark refers to, the League of Municipalities, they're more interested in doing a complementary inventory of various communities and their assets and what they have to offer and so forth, so which sort of plays into this. So other communities may have, you know, an edge on in terms of housing, affordable housing, things like that. So that's part of what the Municipalities League is doing, is just doing that inventory. And again, it kind of comes together under Journey to Growth and things like this. All right, Mr. Mayor.
I don't want to sound too parochial, but I would just caution, when you look at the front notable trends, those are the county. And if you put the Rochester numbers there, they're quite a bit different. And those 22% of the overall population is 31% in the city. Persons of color is 119%, persons of 108. Older adults is 75%, not 68%. The data is here, but don't jump to a conclusion just on that. And that's by saying, not ignoring what the county is, but we're looking also at the city. There are some significant differences in those numbers.
Okay. Anyone else? So what's the next step? What might we see next, or when might you have more, or what's next?
The Cradle to Career Report that's coming next month will probably be the next step in this. We do anticipate that we'll continue to update this on a regular basis. The schedule hasn't been determined. It depends on what the funders. It was a nominal amount. I want to say $3,000 maybe what the city put in. So I think it was a good bang for the buck. But from my perspective, the Cradle to Career is going to be something that really takes us to the next step. But I also think how we use this in strategic planning is also an important next step.
Okay. All right. Anyone from Mr. Wojcik?
So, you know, obviously a lot of data is collected to come up with these numbers. Have we done this in such a way where the data sources are able to be refreshed easily? So we can...
Absolutely. We're relying on Wilder, and they're updating them all the time. And in fact, if you go to Wilder's website, you can pull any of this data, and you can also you can do more analysis right there. I mean, you can pull all this data and even a deeper dive if you want.
Does it have the I don't know, some of these probably aren't available. Does it have the ability to switch between county and city?
Where it's available.
Yeah,
some of this data is only collected at a county level.
Right.
And some. So you'll see on the back where it has more specific data, those were areas where they could pull by city. But you're right, Mayor, a lot of the data is collated. And so it depended on what they had available. Yeah. And in the next version, there will be an arts and culture area that was not in the 2016 version. So they just came out with that a couple weeks ago.
All right. Great. Anyone else? All right. Thank you.
We look forward
to the next step. That brings us to other business. Topics for this afternoon?
I had a couple things. One, I don't know what's to be done about it, but the situation with the bus service last Friday, I had a lot of complaints about that. I think we put out in our public statement for the snow emergency to stay home or take the bus, you know, stay off the roads, and then, you know, we shut down the bus service. I think some of that was maybe done more on anticipation of what was going to happen as opposed to what really happened. Because I know, I think side streets were clear, at least mine was, by 7 a.m. That's pretty standard for a regular snowfall. So I just think it needs to be, I know talking to Tony, he says it's only happened twice in 40 years, but it happened Friday. So I just think it needs to be a pretty serious decision before we cancel the bus service, because a lot of people are counting on that for transportation. So again, I don't know what's to be done other than direct it to staff. And I don't know if there's any kind of objective measures we could put in, but I think rather than anticipate what might happen, I think we need to look at, you know, actually what's going on in terms of weather.
Mr. Mayor?
Well, I had sent out a note, and I didn't send it to everybody. I don't know if you saw it. And it was more of a suggestion. I thought, well, we got plows out. Could not the plow go that route before the first bus goes out?
And yeah, the bus routes. Yep.
Taken care of. Because my first, when I heard it at 6 in the morning that the buses were closed, and I was trying to catch up with a couple guys from the Weather Channel, which gave me wrong addresses all morning, so I drove for an hour around town. There were a lot of streets that were not plowed in the residential, but I wondered if we couldn't do, not that they would be right in front of the bus because the bus is stopping all the time, but I thought they know the routes.
Yeah.
And I know they have priority in certain areas of the city, downtown, things like that, but could we not have the plow be in front, not right in front of the bus, but they know what the routes are.
But I think that's what they do now. The bus routes are cleared first.
Well, then I don't understand why they don't.
Right. Yeah, I don't either. That's what I'm asking. And I don't know if we just direct it to Public Works just to try to understand more what went into that decision making. Tony in his email said the decision was made at 4 a.m. based on conditions at that time. But again, I'm just trying to understand how it was different than we didn't have the high winds that were anticipated and such. So it made it, even though it was a tremendous amount of snow, it was more like a regular snow event as opposed to a blizzard or something that might be extraordinary. So,
Mr. Ruskin.
Well, I think it's, it's times like this that people really need to lean on the bus service. And, the biggest thing that people are going to find in the safety and the reliability of is something they can depend on. And then we pull it out from under them, then it kind of goes away and gets them right back to square one. So I guess we've been catching a little bit because people think we're responsible for making the decision. We didn't have anything to do with the decision. I'm kind of interested in who made the decision and what was the idea of it, because it seemed to kind of be counterproductive to the fact that we're telling people to stay home, but the buses will be running, and then all of a sudden, no, the buses aren't running. And a lot of people with not too many options that didn't have their streets plowed. So I guess I'd kind of like to know the procedure and the process, and is this going to happen in the next, is this going to be something that happens more often, or is this a once in a 20-year deal? So,
Mr. Woodger?
Did the private bus service shut down? I thought I saw that they'd shut down as well, the charter buses.
Well, I saw some posting on social media that Rochester City Line commuter bus shut down.
I mean, and that's the kind of a benchmark that I'd use to say whether or not it was reasonable. I had some areas that were still, as of that evening, probably not passable with the buses because at the start of that snow, we had some rain, and then it created some icy in some of the hillier areas. But the thing that I hear that bothers me more than all the others is the fact that we had a press release directing people to the bus and not if the bus isn't running. That one's easy for us to fix. We can put some conditional statements in there. And I think you're right. Let's just get an update from Tony on how things came to be and what we can do better.
And I agree it needs to be kind of coordinated. I was told, I haven't verified it, but I was told that the Mayo employee shuttles even quit running. So there were a lot of transportation avenues that were all being shut down, but it should be coordinated such that one's running and one's not, and then that really confuses people. Sorry, who had their hand up? Okay.
My fat bike that I rode down to Quick Trip to get groceries worked fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Hickey?
Had one more topic. Sure. Had someone contact me, situation with the sidewalks getting overplowed. So normally, certainly in a residential area, you've got the boulevard area, so when the plow goes down the street, it kind of dumps the snow into the boulevard. We've got certain areas where the city has widened the street at the expense of the boulevard, so that pretty much the snow gets dumped right on top of the sidewalk. And the person that contacted me here is along 7th Street Northwest in the vicinity of Cook Park, where there's not much of a boulevard. And they had actually hired out to have their front sidewalk cleared, and then the plow came through. And I think we all know, as far as you can see it up here, if it's the end of your driveway, that's just kind of the way it goes. I mean, the plow has to put the snow someplace, but when it goes down a whole street, and it's especially that small snow event, there was quite a bit of snow, so it makes it pretty challenging to clear that. So again, this is one of those, I don't know what the solution is, but I think it's not a typical situation. So it's not the situation where someone just got their driveway plowed in. This is something where, because of the situation where the city expanded the street at the expense of Boulevard, there's no place for that snow to go except top over, right back onto that sidewalk. Yet, we're expecting the homeowner to maintain that. So again, another situation. I don't know what the solution is to that. if there's under certain conditions, the city, you know, in a big snow event, would come back and take care of the sidewalk or what?
Mrs. Johnson.
I had a constituent with the same issue, but his concern with the city coming back to take care of it was they would use a skid loader over the sidewalk that he paid for. So he took issue to that. So I don't know the answer, but I just put, you know, just a concern that I'd heard as well.
Mr. Russ?
I dealt with this a couple years ago with Carpet One owners contacting the city, and they just paid someone to take care of the whole area, and the Pauls came by and dumped all on it again. And I was told by the city engineer that's tough. That's the rule. They have to clean it. So,
well, that's until we tell them something different.
Well, yeah.
So for now, I know that's the answer right now.
It's just not a great way to treat our.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, the other thing that could happen is you kind of slow the plows down. I mean, it's coming over because of the top. Yes. So I'd say send them pictures to Public Works to get them to answer it. But it isn't. I've had some of those calls over here. It's not easy.
Right.
So you want us to channel all those calls to you?
I'm just fine with you. But send the pictures and we'll get Richard and his folks to answer. But it does happen. My side working somewhere similar.
All right. Mr. Wojcik?
I think it's important to know that we can always you know, take care of some of these issues ourselves. But of course, there's a huge expense that comes along with that as well. And but there is one thing, and whenever we get... not VPAC, but it's like PBAC now. When we get them up and running, one of the things that can be done is, and should be done, it should have been done a long time ago, is we have templates laying out the design of streets, and even if you have a current situation, we have a lot of places where we allow 5-foot boulevards. With a snow event like this, this will push the snow well over the boulevard onto the sidewalk, and you know, just for a number of good reasons, whether it be street trees or snow storage. A lot of cities have updated those templates to ensure that there's a 7 or 8 to 10 foot boulevard as roadways are constructed and reconstructed, which really helps with these kind of problems. And it, when you have the never-ending pressure to just widen roads, that at least gives a little bit of additional context to what it means to the other functions as well.
Mr. Bilderbeck?
Yes, along with that, as long as we're talking about the snow, I got some concerns that roads weren't sanded. So there was a lot of, because we had a little bit of rain first and the snow was very heavy, there was an issue of when do we sand and salt and when do we not, because I've got a couple neighbors who've called and were concerned about roads that were not. They watched the plow go by and take the snow off the top, but they didn't throw any sand down or salt down, so which didn't help a lot.
Mr. Russ,
since we're piling on, are we?
It's a snowstorm.
Is it a designed strategy to not clean the streets up in the downtown right now? Is it we're just going to let it all melt? Is that kind of part of the plan? Because there's nothing being cleaned up, and it's making it difficult to get around. So
they're
I don't
not
know.
Leave them.
What's that?
No, it won't be left for.
I'll bet you something happens tonight. As they catch up.
One of the things, too, is the plow drivers were really out on some long shifts with that, so it would not at all surprise me that just to maintain their humanity that they're getting them some rest in between going out.
I'll get you when they're...
Yeah, I just know. I just have people ask me, it's like, how come... Usually they're so good and efficient at getting it cleaned up, and there really hasn't been anything for a couple of days, and it's just kind of...
I think it's like Michael said, I mean, they think they worked a long time.
Sure.
So.
Yeah, and I know they out there doing their best and working hard, and, you know, the things that they have to deal with mailboxes and park cars and heavy snow and all that is certainly understanding, so...
All legitimate concerns, we'll get them to them and talk to them. Mark, if you want to send...
Yeah, I'll send that.
I would say, you know, and I know you'd all agree that they do a remarkable job with moving snow and getting people around. They do a really good job.
Yeah, and that was the point.
But that doesn't mean that these are not issues to look at.
So no, that was the point I was going to make. I was really impressed with the amount of snow. Again, we didn't turn out to get the blizzard, but we had a tremendous amount of snow, and the job that Public Works did clearing that on Friday, I was really impressed.
They spent 45 minutes just on the street right in my immediate area, and so I tossed a bag of homemade cookies up to the snowplow driver.
There you go.
So we got them quick turn.
And I think that last point is worthwhile. In context, you know, we only get one of these storms, you know, typically one a winter, and they do a great job cleaning up. I think there are other ways that people have found to creatively work around it, too. But just a, here's a fact for you. The Mayo Clinic allows has 6,000 licenses that allow people to remote in, dial in from home, and work. And we almost maxed it out. We were using 5,200 of those, thereabout. That's how many people were able to still get to work, so to speak, by using some technology and some creativity. So that was good to hear.
You know what I gotta say then? It's good that all those people could afford broadband.
Any other business, Mr. Atkins?
At the last council meeting, the council tabled a request to publish a notice of a hearing dealing with proposed amendment to the charter on the city administrator duties. Afterwards, the deputy city attorney who staffs the charter commission for me brought to my attention the state law that says that the council must publish a notice of a public hearing on a proposal brought to its attention by the charter commission and must hold the public hearing and must vote on it. And so with that information at the next council meeting, I will ask that you take that matter from the table and suggest that you go ahead and authorize the public hearing, despite the fact you know how the outcome might come up.
Okay.
And I actually really appreciate that. I think the this kind of stuff, I think it's good that the public gets a vote on it. So this will be a good process to go through and we know where we go next.
All right. Anything else for this afternoon? All right. Then we are adjourned.
Wow.
I know.
There you go.
Going to the bar. Yeah. So I'm going to put together a quick resolution to eliminate the local restrictions. Now, since they've eliminated the restrictions,
get that to me.
I guess I can get that one.
Sure.
Okay. Yeah.